Welcome, everyone. Welcome to our very exciting publisher AMA. It's an Ask Me Anything. It's going to be an interactive session today. I'm Jessica Alice. I'm your moderator for this session. I'm the artistic director of Byron Writers Festival in Byron Bay. And formerly, I was the CEO of Writers SA here in Adelaide. And this session, as are all of our morning sessions here on the North Stage, are presented by Writers SA in partnership with Adelaide Writers Week. If you're not already a member, I strongly recommend you joining the State Writers Centre and the best resource for writers in our state. So thanks for coming along. I'd like to acknowledge that we're meeting on sovereign, unceded Kaurna Yatta, Kaurna country, and acknowledge elders past and present, and acknowledge that this country is land that has held stories and people sharing language and cultures for millennia. And this land will continue to hold stories and cultures for millennia, and it's a privilege that we can gather in the spirit of language and storytelling and acknowledge that rich tradition. So welcome to our Book Publishing 101. Now, we have a panel of titans of the writing and publishing industry here, who I am thrilled to introduce you to. On the westerly end of the panel is Melanie Austell. Melanie has worked in trade publishing as an editor, publisher, educator, and now literary agent. In 2002, she spent 3 months in-house in London and New York on a Churchill Fellowship. A senior editor at Text Publishing for over 10 years, Melanie has since freelanced with all major Australian publishers and held publishing positions in Perth and Sydney. She has led writing workshops across the country, including one yesterday here in Adelaide, and taught several universities. And Melanie's current focus is on building her client list. So take note. Central on our panel is Jean Rickmans. Jean is a literary agent with the Cameron Creswell Agency, Cameron's Management, and a former senior publisher at Random House and HarperCollins Australia. Prior to joining the publishing world, she worked in arts television and was features editor at Elle Magazine and books editor at Vogue Australia. She is the author of 2 books and is the former artistic director of Canberra Writers Festival. And on the easterly, I'm sorry, I'm just obsessed with saying the cardinal directions now because I sort of forgot which was east and west before, and now I'm just very happy that I've remembered them. On the easterly end is Vanessa Radnidge. Vanessa is the head of literary at Hachette. She has published fiction and non-fiction and is very proud to have worked with Fable Parrott, Mark Brandy, Stephanie Bishop, just longlisted for the Stella Prize, Miranda Tapsell, Sean Doherty, Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed, Claire G. Coleman, many more, just to name a few. Please make our wonderful panel very welcome. Welcoming Melanie, Jean and Vanessa. Now, as I mentioned, this will be an interactive session. So I believe we'll have we've got a microphone on the stand, which will be placed in this central aisle. So if you would like to ask a question, just hop up and line up at the microphone and we'll do questions that way. And rather than waiting till right at the end, we'll actually do it during the session. So at any point, if you want to ask a question, pop up and head to the mic, and you can do that starting right now. But I thought I would ask, we've got these 3 incredibly impressive women, as you've just heard from their bios, their long history in Australian publishing. I'd love to ask each of you just a little bit about how you got to where you are, and if we can get maybe a short kind of introduction to your career that led you from your introduction into the publishing industry and to here where you are now on this wonderful stage here in Adelaide.
They're looking at me. Okay, I'll start. I feel very blessed to work in publishing. I feel very lucky. I started off when I was at school thinking that I wanted to be a journalist, and I actually did a kind of internship at a Sydney radio station at 2UE, because I thought that would be very fabulous. And I did a few weeks there, and I was told at the end of that time, when I was hoping to get a job, that I wrote really well, I edited really well, but I sounded like a 12-year-old and I would never get a job in radio.
Wow.
And I was a little bit shattered. And I was working in a bookstore at the time, going to uni, and there was no courses for editors or anything at the time. And then I decided that I might like to look into publishing. That sounded wonderful. And way back then, editors were trained through the law book companies, because there was this fabulous thing called loose leaf. So when legislation changed after a court case, all the solicitors in the whole of Australia had to get notifications of those changes. And so I worked in Local Government Ordinance 70. And so you would have these folders of case law, and there'd be family law, and the best editor was on family law. They'd be there the longest. And the lowly new person got Local Government Ordinance 70. But I was really proud of that, because when I walked up fire stairs, on the back of fire stairs, you'll see the kind of what the laws that govern fire stairs. And I used to walk up fire stairs and go, look, I do that, Local Government Ordinance 70. And
who says local government not fun?
Yeah, exactly. And it was brilliant training, because you had to be exact. You you worked with a barrister or a solicitor who would send you the amendments that had to be made, and then you would type, like, put them together and typeset them, and it'd be like, then the instructions would go out to the solicitor saying, take out pages 71 to 75 and replace them with these, which would be the new laws. And it was a long time ago, so there was hot metal still. There was no such thing as the internet. And it was brilliant training. And from there, I decided I wanted to get into trade publishing. I had a brief stint at Practical Punting Monthly and also Australian Doctors Weekly, but I'm a hypochondriac. I couldn't stay there because I had everything. And then I got into educational publishing, and I was on the prize of trade publishing, but you have to earn your stripes. And so I went to educational publishing, and I worked... I did shipping, I did proofreading, I did editorial, I did everything. There were two editors, a production manager and me. So it was great training. And then I was lucky enough to do some freelance work, and I was working for a few different companies. And then I got offered a job by two, Allen & Unwin and HarperCollins. And I had to choose, and I chose... HarperCollins, because it was full-time, whereas Allen & Unwin was part-time. And that's where I got my start and loved it, and have worked my way up to publisher now at Hachette. And I can honestly say, working in publishing, the best thing about it are the people, the authors I work with, but my colleagues. And I have been in the industry a long time now, and I am learning every single day, and I just love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Incredible optimism.
How about you, Jean?
Oh, I love my job. No, no, I really do. I sort of fell into publishing sort of accidentally. I grew up in Canberra. If you grow up in Canberra and you then study in Canberra, the first thing you want to do when you graduate is go as far away as possible. So I fled to France, and I studied in Paris, and then accidentally fell into a job as a researcher on a weekly live arts cultural program, a bit sort of like the Melvin Bragg of France. He actually had a book show originally, Bernard Pivot, and that was 3 years of just an incredible experience in television. I returned to Australia and I applied for a job at SBS. Originally, as a researcher, I wanted to work on the book show, I was aware. Mm. I'd been away from Australia for almost 6 years. And SBS was so marvellous at the time. It was just such a spontaneous, wonderful place to work. And they said, oh, no, you can be an arts reporter. I said, but I don't want to be an arts reporter. I want to be a researcher. Oh, no, you've got that sort of ethnic look. Right? I said, well, what do you do? I don't have any, have no training, no desire whatsoever. And then found myself, just look at that camera and walk and talk. I was like, well, what do you do with your hands? And, so I did that. And you know, really, I didn't enjoy it much for 3 years. And then next thing it was, oh, you could present Masterpiece on Monday nights. And because Andrea Stretton, at this stage, had moved to Canberra to work with then Arts Minister Michael Lee. And I actually preferred that because there was an auto cue. Mm. And I figured, and you watch the documentary, and you just write the intro and the outro so you have some editorial control. And they would purposely slow it down because I speak quickly. But that was sort of an easier. But again, I just didn't like ever being in front of anything. I just wanted to research. That led me into making a documentary, which then turned into a book. An agent approached me. It was a non-fiction biography of a Catholic nun who flew a small Cessna plane in southwest Queensland. And so I flew with her, so I quickly got over any fear of flying in her little Cessna. But it was the stories of the women whom she visited in the outback, which then led, accidentally, was published by Random House, because I then went into magazine feature editing, and working in a women's magazine is great fun for a certain period of time, but it's like working in a chocolate factory. It gets to a point where you start to feel a bit nauseous. And this is the time we had, you know, wonderful junkets and things, but I just thought magazines, newspapers, you know, ultimately I want to contribute in some way. Books last, you know, once it's, you get that National Library catalogue number, that's there forever. Mm. And this job came up at Random House, and you know, the description said 3 years trade publishing experience, none. So I just went into the job interview and said, look, I like stories, I've made stories in television, they're different, you know, different means, but I'd love to have the opportunity. So I had no idea what I was doing in the very beginning, but you suddenly learn how to meet agents. But it's really, again, it's just, I think, having a curious mind. And when you get that first book, I mean, even today, it's been, what, now 24 years, one never tires of an author's face when they open the box and they pull out the physical book. And it's just this kind of wonderment. And that is the joy. And stories, and important stories, all stories are important. So really, I think the facilitating of storytelling is a real gift. It can drive you crazy at times. Beautiful. Rejection part's not great, but yeah.
All right, well, we'll get to rejection in a minute. How about you, Melanie?
A little bit like Vanessa, I was a bookseller initially, and this is at a time in Melbourne where things were going, interest rates were 21% from memory, and it all became very hard. People weren't buying books. Indie bookseller I was. I worked for two big independent bookshops when I was sort of living a dilettante's life. And then I decided that I would go to Japan because a lot of friends were going. I'd worked for Yamaha Music because music was somewhere or a space I inhabited as well. And while I was in Japan, I had the opportunity to start writing readers' reports on films, whether or not they could go to VHS in Japan for viewers, you know, and to go from there. So I was starting to do these readers' reports in proliferation, and I was in Japan for 2.5-3 years and came back and went to Sydney and decided I wanted to work in film and started to do stuff in film. And then I realised film takes forever. And there's usually hundreds of people involved. The number of people you're having to collaborate with really, I think, compromises projects in some ways. So I thought books with editorial, you have a clearer trajectory there, you're working closely with the author. It's a purer form of communication. And so I moved back down to Melbourne and I got a job as a lowly editorial assistant, the oldest editorial assistant in the universe, and started from there. And did a couple of years and then was made redundant, and redundancy is something that happens quite a lot in publishing. And then eventually got a job at Text and stayed there for 10 and a half years. And when I joined, staff made 4, and when I left, we were 22. So that really kind of just exploded. And then subsequently decided I needed to do something else and cast around for a few things, left Text and was doing freelance, which I loathed, and teaching, which I quite liked, but not too much. And then decided, you know, took a couple of publishing positions around the country. I was doing a lot of workshops and then decided that I really needed to come back home and put out my shingle. So I'm sort of a reluctant agent in a way, because I didn't think that that was my natural path.
Yeah, quite a few lucky accidents and some happenstance in these careers. Now we've got a number of questions, which is great. And I just thought before we'd start, just for the benefit of anyone in the audience who's not sure, could you tell us a little bit about what a literary agent is? What that role plays, and then what the publisher does. If we can just set the scene for everyone who's not au fait with the industry.
I think patient and a psychologist for half the time. I was previously at Cameron's Management, but just like you were saying, I fell into agenting again sort of by accident. I never really thought, because I'd come from the publishing side as a publisher, working with agents. But essentially, publishers will give priority to agented manuscripts. That said, when I was on the other side of the publishing fence, I very much enjoyed looking at what's known as then the slush pile. So the manuscripts that come through unsolicited. I just always was a bit curious, as there could be something in here where either somebody doesn't know they need an agent, or for whatever reason. And a lot of it is dross, but you can find some incredible gems. And so I found Johnny Warren, the former Socceroo captain, at a time when everyone said, who's Johnny Warren and who cares about soccer? And I said, it's football. I said, no, it's soccer. And, you know, there's no way Australia will ever represent, you know, will ever be part of a World Cup. And Johnny's whole book was what was fabulous. It was really a look at 1950s, 60s Australia, multicultural Australia, and how a white kid from Botany pushed so hard. I mean, his whole, like, he talks about his mission. But anyway, but publishers will give that priority to agented manuscripts. So as an agent, you receive submissions, quite a lot of submissions. I just recently launched a new agency with an old colleague, and you know, you're never short on submissions. So it's really there's a lot of reading and assessment.
But what else do we do that's different from publishers?
Weep. I think being again on the other side is that we have sat in on what are called acquisitions meetings. In every publishing house, you have either a weekly, mostly weekly, some houses have a monthly. And so I always put myself in the position of because you have to pitch. And it's a bit like a French court of law. You have to prove your innocence. You're guilty and you have to prove your innocence. Even though it's called acquisitions, you are being absolutely hammered by the marketing, sales, rights. And you really have to demonstrate somehow, because the strength of the story is not going to be enough by saying, I love this. You'll always have, back in the day, there'd be a published imagine going, I didn't like the writing. So, well.
I'd like to pipe up here about the difference for me from publishing and being an agent. As an agent, you're the author's champion. Mm. Publishers, when they acquire the work, they become the champion in-house. But you're actually responsible for the author's career. And the idea is every agent and every publisher would like to have an author who has a career. It's not just one book. They've got a commitment. They've got a demonstrative ability to write. And they're kind of switched on to things. So we talk about strategy. We talk mm-hmm. about ways in which we can better position the author to the publishers and see ways in which they can harness that awareness for sales and marketing as well as providing a damn good story, okay? Some agents are much better at hand-holding and author care than I am. I profess I'm not great at it. I really think that I'm not responsible for your private life, and nor do I want to be. So it's taken me about 8 years of agenting now to put bigger boundaries around that. It's really important mm. because it gets far too porous. And dear authors, we love you very much, but you're so needy sometimes and we can't help with
that. That's the weeping part.
Yeah. Yes, as you can tell, Melanie has a no bullshit approach, which I love. All right, our first question. Thank you.
So it's a question to all three of you. In terms of trends in publishing, to what degree do publishers lead that or respond to reader interest? So, for instance, at the moment, crime is very big and every book published is a small country town with a missing woman, which I'm a little bit over. You know, how do you anticipate or respond to the trends within the readership and the buying public?
Okay. So I think any publisher that tells you that they're spot on ahead of a trend are probably lying. Mm-hmm. I think always, always, always it comes down to the story. But obviously there are going to be moments when... you can hook a book on a trend, and you bring up crime, which is really interesting because a few years ago, before Jane Harper was published, and Pan did a beautiful job of publishing that book, and Jane Harper is an incredible talent. Before that, you would sit in an acquisitions meeting, and I can tell you that a number of times I would have a great story that I absolutely loved, and my colleagues would love it too, but they'd say Australian crime doesn't sell, and so what a shame, we can't make an offer. And so we pay attention to trends. We'd love to set a trend absolutely, but I think the thing about trends and what sets something off, there's something in the zeitgeist, so you pay attention to what's going on in the world, in culture, on TV, in fashion, but so much of it is luck and timing.
Great. Oh.
Well, I mean, I think timing, I was talking about that last night in the workshop, timing is something that you can't plan for, okay? It's just that gift. All you can do is prepare like crazy. So you do all your work and you're in control of the manuscript when you decide whether you're submitting to an agent or a publisher. Not everything else is sort of up to chance or luck, okay, in some respects. But in terms of, I don't want to see any more rural noir. I'm sick to death of seeing it. And it's becoming lazy and sloppy. And what I want is I want something different. So trends for me are really... not something I'm interested in. I'm interested in something that's original and something that's fresh and something that has a distinctive voice. That, to me, makes it compelling reading, okay? I really don't want to read about more dead women being found in dams or things like that. I'm done. So whatever you're doing, try and do it with integrity and be original about it.
Mm. I think that's it. It's about originality. Mm. You just know when you read something. People say, do you read the entire manuscript? And I would say that you pretty much in the first 2-3 pages know where you are. Mm. If it's really awful in those first 3 pages, it's not going to get much better. So when, in terms of submissions, which is usually three sample chapters, they don't have to be in sequence. It's really the strongest material. You've got to get out, you have such a limited, I think, in terms of not just attention and focus, but really that's it comes down to the words. And then, of course, afterwards, when it goes into the whole machine, there's that wonderful, you know, word of mouth. You cannot generate or manufacture word, you know, word of mouth. So when you think about The Hair with Amber Eyes, I mean, I remember that was brought in as a book under distribution, and I think they calculated at the time some 300 copies. What happened? Mm. It just somehow hit the mark, and it took off.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's that the time, as you say, you really need to have, you really need to think about how you are presenting. Mm. And to do the research, because just handing it to an agent, expect the agent to do all that work. The agent, of course, again, is going to be the champion and the advocate. But it's really what we're looking for, what I look for, is how invested and also about how you back yourself.
Great advice. Our next question.
All right, this is going to take a bit of time, but it won't, I'll keep it short. I've been published since 2006. So I write non-fiction. Now, the first book was published in America, and since then, I can't get a book published in Australia. I wrote a book about the 1929 Dracula stage play, and it was rejected in Australia. Went over to America, straight away picked up. It got nominated for what's called a Rondo Award, which is the highest award for that genre. The next book I wrote after that was a study of Australian cinema and horror in it. And again, didn't get looked at here. Went over to America, McFarlane Books, picked it up immediately. That's also been nominated for an award. Now, I've tried to get an agent. I've been told, no, you have to be published. Well, I'm published, but you have to be published in Australia. Well, I can't get published in Australia. So now I've done, the latest book I've done is a biography of Louise Lovely, the actress. Again, pitched it to Australian publishers, nothing. Go to America straight away. Now, I want this book published in Australia because it's about an Australian. So what do I have to do to A, either get an agent, or B, get my book in front of someone at a publisher that's actually going to look at it and not go, you're not represented, we're not interested, you're in a slush pile, and we're not even going to respond to you. My books are being published, they're being award nominated, and they're being recognised all over the world except for the place where they should be published.
So when they were published in America, did you actually give them the opportunity to acquire world rights? Do they have world rights to these books?
No.
Okay, so the thing to me is that this is specialist publishing, okay? It's a much smaller niche area. So trade publishers might not be as interested as you might like to think they are, and they might be expensive books to produce, but they can produce them in America in volume, but they can't do it here. So it might not be a bad idea if you were to think about talking to these American publishers and them actually exporting copies to Australia.
The McFarlane book, they wanted to bring it to Australia, but God love them.
I'm so sorry, but we have quite a long line of questions behind you.
Okay,
so might continue it, unless there's any other bits of advice for this gentleman.
I think that's really solid advice, which is looking at the right situation, because you know the topic is niche in this market, so it is very difficult for be it a you know multinational or an independent to pick it up.
Because Australian distributors don't carry McFarlane books.
You can do some homework on that, I reckon. Okay, but I do think it's difficult to get an agent for that. It's really small here, and it would be difficult to find a proper publisher to make it worth everybody's while.
But interesting on the reverse side, so many authors are wanting to be published the other way. They're desperate to be published in the US and UK, so you've actually got something that an author would say, I've tried to get into the US and the international market, and it just doesn't fly.
I'm just going to add something too. I'm just going to say congratulations, because you're tenacious and you're bold and you've been published, and that is brilliant. So well done. Publishing will break your heart because it's a business, but we're working with creative people. So that is the hardest thing for in a publishing house. You can love something, you can appreciate the talent, but you've got to see a commercial opportunity for it and a market, and there's a tension there. So you might be a great writer, and writing is art, writing is an expression, writing is how some people make sense of the world, and that's brilliant, and nobody can take that away from you, the writing craft. The business of publishing is very different.
Thank you. Oh, wonderfully said.
Well said. Yeah, good on you, Vanessa.
Hi, just a quick question. As agents, how often do you recommend or suggest to authors that they have the book edited before you take it to a publisher?
Again, oh, you're sorry.
Well, you go first.
Again, I think if that's the recommendation, so if I'm reading and I see that there is a kernel, there's something there, I would recommend, we work with many, and all publishers work with a group of freelance editors, but I think you've got to go out with the best possible material. You need to, when you go to an agent, you've done everything to try and secure their interest.
I think it's a bit, the answer is it depends, really. I generally don't recommend people use editors and then come back to me. I want to see something that I feel is pretty clean anyway, but I always generally do developmental work before I send out manuscripts on submission if I'm prepared to take someone on. And the way I work generally is I issue a challenge to that prospective author that I might take on and say, let's have a conversation, I'll talk about big picture stuff. If they go away, work on that manuscript, and I can see that they understand what I'm getting at, then I'll take them on. But it's that willingness to do the work, it's that acceptance of feedback to be constructive, to make your manuscript the best that it can be before it goes in-house, and then we can go from there. I do know a number of agents who might recommend for manuscripts to be edited. They're often copy edited, and it's kind of way too soon for that. It's about the shape of the manuscript, about the believability of characters, about having a compelling or enticing story that the reader wants to stay with. They're the big picture issues that you must have pretty much addressed and remedied before you go to an agent or a publisher.
Yeah, I'm just going to add too that agents and publishers are reading a lot, and most of the reading is done in their free time. It's not done in work time. So you only get one crack for someone to keep reading, and so just don't rush it. Don't rush it. Don't finish it and go, great, done, gone. Put it in the drawer and wait a little while and write something else or go for a swim or a walk or whatever. But then go back to it and read it, because you'd be amazed how much you will kind of find that you would like to change. So make it as great as it possibly can be before you try and give it to an agent or a publisher.
Great advice.
The other point I'd like to make before we go any further is don't go to publishers and agents at the same time. You make a decision whether or not you're going to try and find an agent for your manuscript, and you can go to multiple agents, that's fine, you let them know as a courtesy, but do not cruel your chances by going to publishers and agents simultaneously, all right? That's really important to know.
Yeah, I've actually had manuscripts that have come in that we've looked at in the slush pile or come in a different way, and then about 6 months or a year later, it's come back through an agent, and the writer hasn't told the agent that they'd gone out to publishers, and that's bad.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
If you want to publish a childhood memoir that's set in a... If you want to publish a childhood memoir that's set in a completely different country with no connection to Australia at all, can you still find a publisher in Australia? And do you always expect writers to have a strong platform in terms of prior publication and social media presence?
Well, there's three questions there. I think unless there's some Australian component, it can be a little more difficult to do a memoir like that that doesn't include Australia at all, apart from the fact that the author might live here. That said, if it's a cracking memoir, you know, it has a chance. I don't think social media is as important as it used to be. And the third question was...
You don't have to have been published.
You don't have to have been published yet.
Right. Again, it's down to the story, I think, and you know, how you know, with it hits that emotional sort of... I mean, think about Mao's Last Dancer. I can only imagine an acquisitions meet at the time going in there and trying to pitch, and they would say, well, where's the relevance? And it's also a ballet dancer. But that story was so utterly powerful. Again, there was that. And there are so many cases of memoir, I think.
Yeah.
That publish up. And it's a you know, genre that is always going to be popular.
Good morning. Thanks for your time and stories. This is a question about artificial intelligence. I'm currently writing a crime mystery novel set in Japan, and I'm getting a lot of help by using ChatGPT. It's a lot of fun, and it's very, very fast. I just want to find out, what conversations do publishers have about what they read and if they can tell the difference between my voice and a voice generated by
I feel really strongly about this and was talking in the workshop last night about it. Please don't use ChatGPT to write your novel.
And don't tell the agents.
Well, no, you need to tell the agents because there are some smaller publishing houses now that have a clause where the author has to declare that they haven't used ChatGPT in the writing of the book. So just don't go there.
I'd agree.
Yeah.
I think that artificial intelligence is wonderful for things that take away monotony, but they scare me because what is wonderful about any kind of creation is the humanity of it, and a manufactured humanity scares me.
Mm. It's also just not a particularly good tool. Yet, maybe. No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yet.
The quality coming out of it just isn't particularly good.
And there's stealing from creatives to create. So that's terrible too. So I think any artist should be not happy with that.
There you go.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask about the relationship between publishers in the UK, publishers and agents in the UK, and publishers and agents in Australia. I had four novels published in the UK, and my last manuscript, while they liked, my publisher is HarperCollins, while they liked the manuscript, they rejected it on the basis of not enough sales of the fourth novel. So what would my position be in terms of finding an Australian publisher, an Australian agent?
I think, again, it's about sales. You know, it can be tricky, I think, because, again, this is what we were saying before about, you know, publishing being heartbreaking, is that, you know, previous prior sales can then have the opposite effect just because one has been published. But the first thing, BookScan, that was what, pretty much 2000, that was able to provide us with data. On the one hand, it was great to be able to properly track sales. Every book passed at the counter, clock up a sale. But at the same time, it can really jeopardise a writer for number three or number four. But then again, you can look at someone like Dan Brown. The first three books went nowhere, bang, comes back. So again, one has to be really careful, I think, at an easy rejection.
Yeah, I'm a little confused, and I don't know if we probably don't have time to drill down too much, but certainly UK publishers would love to have Australian rights as well, so they can actually ship titles in here. If you live here, my rule of thumb is to find an Australian publisher always because you're on the ground here, and that would always be my first thing to do. But if you have relationships with the UK and if they can get ANZ rights, often they're still willing to publish into this country. Slightly tricky, I think, that you need to kind of work out how you might like to proceed without us advising you on that particular score.
Great.
Hello. You repeatedly say that trying to publish will break your heart, so I don't know whether I should go any further. I'm a retired psychiatrist. I had a PhD thesis. It's online, so anyone can read it anyway. It's about mental hospitals, or it's really about general hospital psychiatry in New South Wales, the history of. So I think it's reasonably well written. Anyone who wants to know about it could read it. I don't know if there's any point in my trying to publish, because people are interested in mental health. There's two other sessions on mental health at the moment. So I don't know, is it worth the trouble? And if, how do I go about it?
Is it an academic text or a general text?
I think it's general but academic in the sense that I had academic expertise to write it. But the thesis itself, I think, could be read by a layperson. But you know, these are things I can't easily judge. I can't judge whether there's any point in going to the trouble of trying to publish it if it's online anyway.
Well, that's was going to be my response. If it's already available online, that would be tricky even for an academic university publisher, because you are compelling people to pay for your book unless you were to completely overhaul it in a much more commercial. But that's, again, this is a personal decision for you to make. I wouldn't want to...
A quick supplementary. I'd write about something else. I'd write about the mental hospitals of New South Wales for the last 100 years. That's what I'd write about. I know about it.
That would still be specialist, though, so it might be a bit small for an agent, certainly, and it might be a smaller publishing house you'd need to go to.
Okay. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks for taking our questions. This one is about royalties. Just don't understand, as a writer, what sort of opportunity you've got to negotiate about royalties. This would be a memoir and a unique one because it's an Indigenous one, but how much negotiation space is there for such a book?
This is what we argue with them.
Yes.
We push for the highest royalty and they go, ooh.
Yeah. I'm going to say publishers have pretty standard royalties and we don't negotiate. I feel like they're fair, and you guys might not think so. But so I would say most publishers, any publisher I know of, they're trying to be fair. And so what they offer, and I think, you know, for me, it would be 10% of recommended retail price. So that's kind of standard.
You want to avoid it on net receipts. You want to do it on RRP. That would be the advice. And it's 10% is industry standard. Some publishers will often, and agents will push for what's known as a riser to 12.5%. Now, that could kick in at 10,000 copies sold. If the publisher wants this book so bad and you're in an auction situation, they will throw everything, will give you an escalator at 10,000. Standard usually is 15,000, 15,000, 20. But you should not accept anything below 10% because it is industry standard.
Yeah.
Is that right? This is a bit of a cheeky question. I've just read a book about the worst sides of writing, editing and publishing. You might know it. It's got a yellow cover. I just wondered if you received the manuscript for that book, how would you approach the rest of the publishing, editing, etc.?
I would have loved to have got that manuscript.
Can we just introduce the book maybe first, just so for anyone who isn't aware of that, it's Yellow Face is the story.
Yeah, I read it and could see why it did so well. I didn't think that it was wholly accurate in terms of depicting the publishing world, because it's quite a scathing indictment of what goes on or what transpires there. But I'm sure anybody who received that manuscript across their desk would want to publish it.
Yeah. Mm. And but it, exactly, it's not exactly what happens in publishing. Just like Younger is not what happens in publishing, but it's fun to read and watch.
Did you? Can I just ask a question on Younger? Because I was thinking about, and I was thinking about you, Jean, as well, because you've worked in women's magazines. Yeah. And the, so the TV show Younger, and actually Melanie, I think you said as well that you were an older editorial assistant. So the TV show is based on a woman who I think she was in the publishing industry. She has a child. She's away from the industry for a while, and then she tries to get back in it as an older woman in her 40s, I think, which is old in the world of publishing when, you know, all the editorial assistants are like 20. And so she, you know, has to pretend to be, she tries pretending to be younger in order to get the job, and it works, but then she has to keep up the charade and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And that came out around the same time as that, as the other show, The Bold Type, which is a little bit more about media and magazine publishing. But did those shows have any impact, do you think, on the world of publishing or on the...
I think a lot of people think it's highly glamorous when it really is one of the most poorly paid jobs, which is still a great problem. And again, when you look at how many women work in publishing compared to men, 98% which is again I think problematic. And you know, there's a lot more that can be done, I think, in houses.
It bypassed me completely, Jess. Sorry, but I do think that you need to go back to Bridget Jones, the first film where you see her in all these thrift shop dresses and things like that, because that's the reality: punishing hours, weekend work, and poorly paid. Yay!
And they didn't bypass me. I love them both, and I laughed and laughed because wouldn't it be wonderful to have a bestseller like that?
Thank you.
Good morning. My question is about picture books specifically. A lot of publishers state that they are not taking on board any unsolicited manuscripts or portfolios for picture books. And also a lot of Australian agents seem to be completely disinterested in taking any on board. What would be the best course of action then if both agents and publishers are disinterested?
That's hard because I'm not in the children's department, but I'll give you the kind of go to festivals, go to writing centres. If there are events where children's publishers are, and I know a lot of writer centres do sessions like that, go to them, talk to them. I'm trying to think. Yeah, like find any possible way to get yourself in front of a publisher. And publishers are nice people and they'll talk to you.
But there are also agents who do specialise in kids' books who have more of a focus. Again, I don't personally specialise, but we just brought in an associate agent, a former children's publisher at HarperCollins and Scholastic, because we felt that there is this need. We don't have that expert knowledge, but she does. So, again, you can go to the list of agents, look at their lists. Who are they publishing? Which children's authors you admire, and then put the questions, and again, writer centres, collect the information.
Yeah, and look at the acknowledgements in picture books, and that will also tell you what agents, because people acknowledge
those
their agents,
agents yeah.
And that will you will be able to see who's doing what.
That's a great tip.
Thank you. My question is, as someone who's not just interested in writing, but the book industry as a whole, what would you recommend to someone who wants to get a job or an internship in publishing or in a literary agency? It's obviously very competitive. I know Hachette have their summer internship program, but how would you best position yourself to get one of these roles?
I was trying to think, well, Australian bookseller and publisher, which you have to have a subscription, which is a bit of a pain, advertise these roles. Again, I'd say word of mouth, go and write to the publishing houses. They will advertise positions, internships on their websites for the most part. Persistence.
Yeah, and Hachette, I know, I can speak for Hachette, I know we always advertise on Seek as well, but keep your eye out for those internships, and there are more and more springing up. Again, we have Inside the Publishing House program that we do with Emerging Writers Festival. It's for writers, but also for people wanting to find out about the industry. So they're great, and there's a lot of kind of Inside the Publishing House events cropping up. I know Varuna are starting to do some. And again, Jess will tell you, through the writers' centres in your state, there is a lot of information and a lot of expertise. But just persevere and be bold. I got my law book company job I was still at uni, and I decided, okay, that's what I want to do. Every month, I rang this poor woman and said, hi, are there any jobs? Hi, are there any jobs? I did it every month. And finally, she said, come in for an interview. And so I did. I bought a white linen suit. I looked fabulous. I sat down, and there was a panel, and I thought it was going really, really well till I leant over, and I'd been swimming that morning, and all this salt water ran out of my nose onto the table. And I was like, oh, that was really... So I didn't expect to get that job, but they offered it to someone that had a master's, and the money was $17,500 to start, and they said no. They offered it to the next person. They said no. They offered it to the next person. I was the fourth in the line. Obviously, the kind of on the table had made an impact. But I got the job. I was offered the job, and, of course, I took the job. So just persevere.
I'd also
and don't
like
go
to
swimming
and
before
that
an interview.
I'd also like to suggest that if you're interested in writing as well, you might want to be doing some book reviews for some of the smaller journals. VoiceWorks, which is a magazine part of Express Media, that's worth you possibly becoming a member of, because you look very young, God bless. But you might need to just prove yourself willing to do some things for Nix first. Because we do nothing but exploit writers early in the deal, I think, just to get your name out there and just to show and get a resume together.
Yeah, great tips.
Hi, nice to meet you all. My question kind of touches on what the picture book talked about, but poetry, obviously very niche. Is there anything that you might look for if you're looking at a collection of poetry that would help it to stand out?
I'm really sorry, I can't do poetry. I don't.
Yeah. Most poets won't have an agent.
Mm. I've taken on three poets. And it's turned out to be actually rewarding. And it was a whole completely different space for me. But one of my authors, who is what was a poet, it does. And again, there are only a few publishers, but it is starting now to become more commercial. I mean, look at Nam Lee. So I wouldn't give up. I mean, there's Upswell, there's a number of specialist poetry publishers, and they're very receptive, and they actually have an open call at a certain period of time where you can submit. And of course, again, there are many specialist literary magazines, but it is, again, it is niche. But then we've seen what's happened to Sarah Holland Batt and what actually has been emerging, which I think is a wonderful thing. I mean, I have a 16-year-old daughter at school. I feel very sad that it's not taught in her school. There's no, you know, it seems to kind of lose its way. But
I used to tutor it, actually, so I
Oh, hello.
Agree
if you can
you.
Move to Sydney, I'd be very pleased.
Sure. But, all right, thank you.
Well done.
I'll spruik writers' essays. The most visited page on the Writers' Essay website is the opportunities page, because it's this fabulous list of all the publishers, all the literary journals in Australia, and when you can pitch to them. And there's a great list of all the poetry publishers there, so highly recommend checking that out.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, and nice to meet you. I'd like to ask about the future, your views on the future of fiction and this trend, if there is one, towards own voice and lived experience, and whether you can appropriate another character's voice and whether there's sensitivity around that.
I don't know if you've got enough time for that. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of a can of worms. I think we the cultural appropriation question often comes up and is probably not the best use of our time, but maybe if there's a useful part of it is maybe about whether if you're writing about are you asking if you have a character who is not you, basically, so writing from a different lived experience, a different point of view, I think probably I assume the response would be, well, if it's done sensitively and well, then that would be no issue.
And often there are sensitivity readers that we do send things to as well. But I mean, often that's a waste of money or not necessarily a good investment of money. But I don't think that you should shy away if it's good fiction and it's done with sensitivity.
Thank you.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, what's the uncomfortable truth or the reality here in Australia regarding more or less opportunities for foreign writers, especially those which English is not the first language?
Opportunities to publish or to work in the industry? Do you mean?
More regarding publishing. To be published as a writer.
When English is not your first?
Yeah. And when you live here in Australia, but you're not an Australian citizen, for example.
I don't think citizenship is an issue. Again, I think it just comes down to the story and to the writing. I don't think there's no hard or fast rule that one would never consider anybody, you know, their background, their gender. Again, I think it's what you're proposing, what you've written, whether it's a children's book, adult fiction, non-fiction, memoir.
It just has to be really good.
Yeah. Any public, they'll just look at it, they'll read it, an agent will read it and make that determination from what you have provided. So again, it's about getting as much information, putting everything into that original proposal.
The only thing that you would be have a problem with is probably maybe some of the writers' competitions, because you have to be a resident. Like the Ritual Prize, which is opening on April 22nd, you have to be a citizen. Or no, you can be a resident. You can be a resident as well. But they can be some restrictions in that. But otherwise, write a great story.
Thank you.
All right, we're down to the wire. So we've got just a few minutes left, so we might try to answer these last two questions quickly.
Hi. You've told us that it's pretty pointless going to a publisher if you haven't had an agent working for you. Could you give us a better idea of the process of working with an agent, like the time to allow, the costs involved, the likelihood of success at the end? That would be helpful. Thanks.
I don't think we've actually said that you've got no hope going to a publisher directly at all. I think that you need to make the decision whether or not you're going to try and pursue having representation before you go to publishing houses. So there's a difference there. Agents don't charge you. We take a commission of your earnings. So we're not paid until we sell your work. Okay? And I think it varies enormously from agent to agent about what the work is or what's involved. So that's a bit of a difficult one to answer.
All right.
Industry.
We'll, in our final minute, we will hear this last question. Thank you.
This is perhaps a follow-up question to that previous one. If you've been unsuccessful finding an agent, is self-publishing an option, and are there any advice or considerations for people that are thinking about that pathway?
Absolutely, self-publishing is an opportunity for you to go down that path. And it's becoming more and more, it's becoming more popular as well across a range of different titles. It doesn't have to be just family memoir or things like that, which it was sort of 20 years ago. And absolutely, it's a legitimate form of publishing. Yeah.
And also, don't forget, you can explore. I mean, audio is really on the rise. It's big. Publishers do want it. It can be a real deal breaker. But also, for example, Audible will accept original works. But just being mindful, the kind of carving off of certain rights can jeopardise, but there's always ways, and there's some really reputable self-publishing houses. And again, you know, you can gather that information, but yeah.
And there's some scurrilous ones too, so be careful.
Yeah, that's right. But then look, 50 Shades of Grey, I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
Self-published.
Yeah. I was just going to say, just ask yourself what you want from publishing too, because some people want to just kind of share their story, and other people want to be, you know, in Hollywood with their blockbuster. And so have some realistic expectations about what this market will give you.
Perfect. All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much, all of you, for asking your questions. Thanks for playing along in our interactive session. And thank you to the wonderful panel. Your experience and expertise has been invaluable. So
thanks, Jess.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank you very much, Jess.